This is Room in the Trees, a podcast about living a creative life. Room in the Trees is hosted by Trent Reynolds and me, Sabrina Ward Harrison.
Show notes, including pictures, links, video, and more for every episode can be found at roominthetrees.com.
You can follow us on Instagram at Sabrina Ward Harrison and at Trent Reynolds Art. And now, here's this week's episode.
Hello.
It's been forever.
2020. It's totally been forever.
I know. It is 2020. That is crazy town, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
2020. It's been 20 years since 2000.
It's so strange.
2 decades. Man.
I think we started the conversation, I think, about 5 years ago. Because I had just moved to Madison around this time, 5 years ago.
5 years. A lot has happened in 5 years.
A lot has happened in 5 years. You've had about 15 children.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Going strong.
Going strong.
We got new gear. Can we just jump right in right with the new gear? What did you get?
Yeah. What do I have of it? I have a Logitech USB headset with earphones and a little like a mic that comes around the front of my face.
Yeah, I love that part. So it's like you're a jet pilot, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. I feel like one actually right now. I just need the suit. Just need the outfit.
Would you be willing to put on your biker outfit and wear the headset at the same time while recording? Or actually, no. I wonder if would the motorcycle have some kind of headphone jack where you could. Ride around with the
yeah. Headset. Yeah. There is that kind of, there's like a Bluetooth thing, that you can get where you can talk to the other rider, through headset. But
I'm enjoying the mental images of you in different situations with your headset on.
The headset wouldn't look badass unless it had the helmet with it, I think, for the on the side of the motorcycle. I must say, though, I got the motorcycle boots at Harley Davidson back in – well, you saw them. I was wearing them at the studio, your studio, when we were filmed a few months ago. And I really like wearing them. I feel they're very heavy, and I walk in like, dun, 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 dun. I like it's just a decisive stepping.
You feel like you're a bigger presence on this earth. You got some weight to throw around. Yeah. Got these boots.
I totally have some weight to throw around. Yeah. Yeah. It feels good.
Well, I'm excited. You sound good. You sound there's less, ambient noise. You sounded good before, but it definitely takes it up a notch.
It wasn't professional. And here we are.
We're totally
it's a new year. It's a new professional level we're hitting.
Yep. We've taken it to the next level.
That makes me think about The Bachelor, which I have just – it's just this thing. It's the new season. And you may not know this about me.
I have never watched The Bachelor, and I didn't realize that you were a fan.
Yeah. So I remember writing in Messy Thrilling Life this one thing about all the things on my mind that day, and one of them was watching The Bachelor. And little did I know, way back then, probably like the second season of it, that it would still be going on to this day. And it's ridiculous. And I love the drama. I love reading the spoilers. I love reading about the fashion, like what people were wearing. It's so much of it. It's just not at all like. I don't know. I don't relate to so much of it, but I still just love it. And I have a couple of friends, Mady Rose. She and I have been talking about it for years. She and I both have that sort of guilty pleasure of the other day, Sean walked in of watching it. Sean walked in. And I was reading one of the recaps, like the breakdown of the episode. Because I don't even watch the episode. Well, I'll watch it the next day on Hulu, but like kind of have it on in the background. Uh-huh. I really just want to read the recaps, get all the spoilers, deep dive. And he came in and he's like looking on the iPad and he's like, I said, I admitted, I'm like, I just kind of the secret thing. about The Bachelor. And he's like, well, this is just, I would really love to not have to watch it with you. I kind of put my foot down there and I said, no, I would never even want to watch it with you. Because it's something that's so like embarrassing, like eating chips in bed or something. It's just this thing. So, yeah, when you said the microphone, because this season is Pete, Pilot Pete is The Bachelor. He flies for Delta. So it's
Pilot Pete.
Pilot Pete. He's the guy. Yeah. So that's just a little backstory.
Is it the drama? Is it the? I don't know enough about the show to even know what the question is asked. But is it? What kind of drama is there? Is it?
Well, supposedly they'll find a bachelor or bachelorette, and they'll have them be in this big mansion, and then they have these contestants, like 29 different women are there, and they're beautiful, and they come in, and they're, you know, and so you get the bit of backstory, and then you try to figure out who is going to be who the front runners are, like who the top three who are going to make it. But then there's this guy, Reality Steve, who's the guy who's been spoiling. Somehow he has inside people, somehow that are inside that he always spoils it before the season even begins. He somehow knows who the winners are.
Oh, no.
And it's never been able to be figured out. So there's this whole other side about, you know, do you read the spoilers ahead of time from Reality Steve? Sometimes I do. I do now. And then I know all the drama ahead of time, so then I can watch it strategically knowing. Like
you know when the moments are going to, yeah.
Yeah. So this one supposedly is figure outable about who's the winner, because somehow they've rigged it somehow that supposedly there's just no way you can figure it out. So we don't know if it's going to be live. Mm-hmm. Don't know, Trent. We just don't know.
So Reality Steve, he doesn't even know.
He doesn't know yet. So he can't. Yeah, he doesn't know. Because the ABC, the network, is always trying to like squash Reality Steve, and they try to sue him. They just try to get him to he gets more and more publicity by way of this guy coming in and, you know, spoiling it. So it makes everyone then want to watch it even more to see if he was right.
Right.
So yeah.
So it's this, you know, love hate thing with Reality Steve.
Yeah, and he's just this guy that lives in Las Vegas and sits around, and he hates the show.
He just so did he like started off as kind of like a joke, but then he got a lot of interest, and now he's like stuck in this hell of his own making.
Yeah, but he makes so much money off of it from the advertising, I guess. Right. But yeah, he's like a sports guy. So he can't stand the show. He hates the whole thing.
Oh, gosh. I'd love to talk to Reality Steve.
Yeah. So anyone can DM me on Instagram if they're all also watching and tell me what they think, if they read the spoilers, where they're at. So right now, I'm not going to give away any spoilers. I know who the top three are.
You know for, like, you've deduced this with your own powers of observation?
Or well, Reality Steve knows who the top... Yeah, he knows who the top two are, so...
Okay. And you wouldn't want to say that here, because...
No, I don't think that would be fair. No. Not fair. So some very loyal, deeply loyal listeners to Room in the Trees and The Bachelor, so...
Got it. All right, well...
Yeah, it's just something. But this is awkward. The people that are the contestants basically were 3 years old or 1 year old when the show started. So they, like, the people on the show are like 22. If it started in 2001,
right?
They're like, they literally have grown up with it since they're infants.
Oh my goodness!
Isn't that weird?
And will they say that on the show? Like, I've loved this show since I was
a toddler. No, no. But when you start thinking about it, it's like, that's just, it's kind of disgusting. Yeah.
I remember that being one of the big, you know, successes of reality TV was Bachelor.
Yeah.
Just never.
And Survivor. Into it. Mm-hmm. No, that's no. Right, it'd be weird if you did. If you'd be weird if you're like, oh my God, I'm totally watching Pete's season. Are you? If you'd said that, it'd be a weird thing.
Well, I'm trying, you know, as you talk about that, like, I'm trying to the idea of what, like, purposefully going out and finding more drama to add to my life is just so antithetical to the way I function, you know, like,
right.
I want less drama. I'm trying to think of what TV show I would reach for to fulfill my needs. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, I think it would be a very short and very boring TV show.
Like a nature, like a really slow moving nature show, maybe.
Or no, I mean, I think probably kind of stereotypically, I would go for something with just senseless violence. Like if it was a nature show,
if it was a
nature show, it would be like, you know, two male rams, like, headbutting each other for 30 minutes.
Really?
You know, just
really
wham, wham, you know, and that guy, you know, then the ram loses and he has to walk off and the next one comes in and they just pound each other. Cause I guess that's kind of what The Bachelor is in a way, right? Like,
yeah,
it's all these right. women like duking it out in their own.
Yes.
Way
yes.
For,
yes.
For dominance. But I guess maybe the male version of that is not drama. It's just beating each other up. And
isn't
I do, I will confess that yeah. I would watch that show. If it was just yeah. like, you know, we've got 20 dudes here and whoever leaves the ring, you know, he's the one that wins and he gets the girl. I would find
wow.
that entertaining. Maybe,
yeah.
maybe we should edit that out.
No, that's awesome.
I don't know.
Because, well,
I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I think that's really interesting. Because you think about why people, like, how it is that we as human beings relax ourselves by watching things that are like aggressive, like football or, you know, boxing, wrestling, and it relaxes us.
Yeah,
it's strange.
It is that is strange when you put it like that, because it is mm-hmm. relaxing to watch, you know, a couple dudes beat each other up.
It's so weird. I know.
When I was in high school, I've got, you know, two good friends from high school that it was just always such a joy to watch them beat each other up. I mean, one would just, you know, be sitting in the back seat and the other one would be driving and the guy in the back seat would just reach around and smack the side of his head as hard as he could.
Really? Who was that?
And there was just this, you know, it was like a celebration of life in my heart when I saw it.
Oh my God.
I don't know what that is. I know it does not speak well for, you know.
So then that could even lead into talking about also in a way when I think about artwork. Like someone sent me this morning a DM with this Japanese artist who's just, she said the exuberance of this woman's art making, what was the term? Was it? I don't think it was exuberant. Fantastic though. She said, you know, it reminds me of the way you work. And she was just throwing this huge bucket of black ink against this, you know, white, big roll of white paper and just all aggressive, but not aggressive, but I just thought, yeah, the physicality, again, back to that. So true.
So that's kind of interesting, because what we're talking about is like, what I'm talking about is like the male equivalent of the Bachelor is like, this is very physical, right? Is like dudes beating each other up. But you're talking about that is a component of your creative process that's really important, is the physicality of it. But it's not an aggression type physicality. How would you characterize that? It's not like you're fighting the artwork. Or are you? Or do you feel like it's this, and maybe exuberance is a more positive way to frame that energy?
I think sometimes, like, it's somehow there's some part of it feels like I have to be wrestling with it somehow. Like I'm wrestling with keeping the paper down because it's windy, or it's like I'm trying to nail this friggin' piece of wood into this other piece of wood and it don't have it. You know, like I don't like having it all. You like the satisfaction of having things like lined up and, you know, ready, and then the satisfaction of doing it correctly. And mine's like, I gotta just do it now, and I'm not gonna even ask if I can use it. I'm looking at this piece that I'm right now on the wall, and one of them's cardboard, and the other one's like really jerry-rigged wooden, nailed together with wood. And I remember just trying to make that one with the wood. It's all janky, and it's funny to think now, Sean, because Sean looked at the cardboard one, and he's like, "Is that?" Now, is that a finished piece? He said, there's paper peeling it off. I'm like, yeah, but it's bet. And he understood. I was like, well, it's a metaphoric piece, because I kept on the ground below me while I was working and on a bigger commission. And I just loved what the cardboard underneath me ended up looking like. So I love it. But the other one with the janky wood, and he's a carpenter, thinking, the precision he finds so much satisfaction in getting things even and done right, and probably looking at stuff I put together is like, holy smokes. But yeah, I think that just the way I'm built. So that's why I think it's hard for me to work in smaller spaces, and it's hard to do, like I was trying to do a demo. I'm like, I don't work on small pieces of paper. I just,
Right.
There has to be somehow, even if it's a small space, it's okay, but the space has to be okay to spill and make a mess in.
Right.
Like the floor has to be okay to go little nuts on.
You just can't have that mental overhead to be thinking about messing stuff up. You need to be able to have that not part of the equation.
Yep.
Do you wear, I don't wear special clothes to make art usually. Like there's nothing that's really off limits as far as my wardrobe is concerned for when I go to the studio. And so I have to, you know, be conscious of not getting everything I own dirty. I mean, although most things have at least a little drop of paint somewhere, but so I guess, you know, maybe that's an equivalence. Like it doesn't bother me so much to be aware of and concerned for keeping things orderly. You would never go to the studio with a nice outfit on.
No.
Cause that would be,
I don't trust myself enough, and it wouldn't be enjoyable.
Right. The enjoyment that is. And this might be going over old territory, but, your physicality, there is this tension and maybe, I dare say drama, you know, this is like, this is happening and then this happened and then I did this. And then, you know, there's this kind of story and narrative back and forth. Whereas the physicality of my work, I feel is very mindless. It's very like, I'm just scrubbing this thing because it feels good to scrub it.
Yeah.
Not as much psychology in there. And maybe this is just all like stereotypical male female stuff, but I don't know. I feel like there's a very different motivations behind you're very physical in your work and the way you make, and I'm also very physical, but the driving forces and the satisfaction kind of are located in different places.
I don't think it's a male female thing. I think it's just a kind of that person that's just kind of who we are as beings.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I'm guessing. Yeah.
I was trying to tie that into or having the bachelor be kind of a metaphor for creativity or creation.
So our topic today is talking about collage, right?
I think it's a great idea.
So when I think about collage, I think about the beginning of it and what the freedom of it feels like, it's such a nice way to begin into the art making. Collage has been something that's, I think we both have used, and it's been for me, it was a great entryway into being a creative person, and it didn't require being able to paint really well or, render things. It just was, it was a tactile, exploratory way of making.
It's it for me, it's the immediacy of it. And I think that what right. you're talking about is it gets to the point, like you don't have to, it's a low barrier of entry. You don't have to necessarily have rendering skills or knowledge of materials and colors and, you know, all the stuff, you know, that keeps us from getting into other mediums that require a lot more training.
Right.
And time and materials and stuff, you know, like the thing I love about collage is it just lets you immediately jump in and start creating, start putting things together.
So, yeah.
I guess I'd have to point back to when I started learning Photoshop in high school. I took classes at the art center.
Yeah.
Night classes, and I was learning Photoshop, and that was really the first time I started taking multiple images and then trying to combine them into a single image, which feels like the digital version of collage.
Yeah, interesting, because there's so you put both of those together, the digital collage and then the physical collage. Do you see them kind of as the same thing for yourself?
I think so. I think one just became an extension of the other. Like I didn't start actually doing physical collage, like with pieces of paper and stuff, until probably a lot later, not until college. And, but I think it was a natural extension because I'd already been thinking in those terms, you know, digitally.
So, yeah, interesting.
I think also photography kind of lends itself to that kind of mindset because, you know, you're working with paper, you're working with arranging, and when you enlarge photos in like a dark room, it's a kind of, when you're projecting and resizing and, you know, it's, and using the chemicals to develop, it all feels very much like a collage process. I don't know, to me anyway. Where you arrange and rearrange and frame and crop, and you're seeing a lot of photographs up on, like when you dry photographs, you're seeing them all next to each other in kind of a group, or when you're making contact sheets to see, you know, your all the negatives on your roll, you see them all next to each other on a similar sheet.
Yeah.
So there's this kind of aesthetic and a way of, I think, processing visual images that is, it, you know, gets to what is nice about collage.
For me, it was something where I was trying to look, you know, I'd be trying to make something and I would just be, well, I don't know. I think the first collaging I did was as a really little kid with just bits of yarn and ribbons and paper and wallpaper and things like that. And then there was the awkward phase of being a New Kids on the Block fan and collaging my walls.
Yes.
Donnie Wahlberg, what's up? Yeah, it's the one and only serious crush of a celebrity person.
I don't think we've talked about it before. We might need to revisit that.
Yeah,
in a future episode.
I had to break the news to Sean the other day. He was watching Blue Bloods. I'm like, I've got to tell you, I had a real thing for Donnie Wahlberg. And it took a little Arsenio Hall show to get over it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so and then I remember I think it was the photography, combination of photography, and then, you know, even just using little bits of color from magazines to create to build up texture and colors and into my photographs. One of my favorite things to do. Of course, like the famous Robert Rauschenberg's collaging. He called them combines. Romare Bearden was another favorite. Do you know his work? Yeah.
But I think it's like we grow up with, especially now that photography is so accessible, so cheap, and so, you know, it's everywhere. It's in magazines, it's in, you know, cereal boxes, it's like whatever surrounds us. That, of course, kids are using these things in crafts. You know, they're tearing them up, taping them together. Like, these are the raw materials that are in our contemporary environment, right? So, of course, that's what we're going to reach to. And I think somewhere along the line, when you go to art school, there you're indoctrinated with a certain kind of hierarchy of values, right? Like oil paint on linen is the gold standard, right?
Right.
Like that's real. That's real artwork, right?
Right.
And then there's this kind of cascading or, you know, diminishing, you know, list of art materials and techniques underneath that, you know. And I think collage tends to be put down pretty low to the bottom. And I wonder if that's not because, you know, the materials are seen as common and, you know, like this is what a kid does. A kid picks up, you know, random stuff and smashes it all together. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's that's becoming a more and more outdated and, you know, mindset of the past. I think as like contemporary art schools, at least when I was there, and it's, you know, been a while now since I was in school, but there really was a push to break down this notion that there, like, some materials are more inherently artistic or valuable than others, you know. It's like there was a fibers department at my school, you know, and where people's art students just focused on creating work out of different kinds of materials, like fibers and bits of paper. And I don't know, it was like, you didn't have to start with charcoal drawings and then graduate to color drawings and graduate to acrylic and then graduate to oil. And, you know, there's this.
And then I guess of just even the financial part of it, that they were more expensive, all those materials. Mm-hmm. Whereas like a magazine and some Elmer's glue and just and some cardboard and you can get at it.
Right. But I think it's important to understand, like human beings, that's in a lot of areas of life, we have to try to justify what we're doing, you know, and try to create an understanding of if it's valuable and why it's valuable. And so we start assigning meaning to certain attributes that sometimes can almost feel random. Like, why is it that oil painting became, you know, this thing of value? Why not acrylic, which is more, you know, a newer material that's more resilient over time? And I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, there are so many nonsensical reasons and things just happen because of, you know, circumstance that make art, you know, people decide what is and what isn't art and what is and what isn't bad, good and bad.
I agree in a certain part. And then the other thing is when you see a really beautiful oil painting of a, you know, beautiful landscape and the sun is just glowing through the landscape and you think, wow, and that feel like monumentally valuable and beautiful and this different level than maybe an acrylic painting of a cow.
True, but I'd say like you're comparing apples and oranges. Mm-hmm. Like if you put a Rauschenberg next to a Vermeer,
right?
It's like you're kind of, you know, they have nothing to do with each
right,
other. You know,
right,
they were
right.
Both trying to accomplish two very different things. So I think that often happens is like all art gets put under one umbrella. And so people look at a Vermeer and then they go to the minimalist section or they go to Picasso and they're like, are we really comparing Vermeer to Picasso? Like just in terms of craft and it's like, there's just, so I guess it depends, you know, the conversation I guess needs to start, like, what are you trying to accomplish and what is it that, what purpose does it serve? I think, yeah, anyway.
And is it just some, what is your form of self-expression that you long, what's going to feel good to do? And so for me, I've never been drawn to a slow painting process of intricate, like that doesn't get me going.
Right.
Where sitting down on the floor in pajama bottoms and listening to Indigo Girls and collaging really gets my heart racing.
Yeah. No, there's so much of this is like feels like it's straight out of that book, Art and Fear. Like,
yeah.
You know, it really does come down to like, what is it that's going to get you creating? You know, what is yours to say? And just because you think, you know, an oil painting of, you know, some pastoral scene, maybe you think that's awesome. That's not necessarily what you're here to say. You know, that's not necessarily your statement or your medium or your mode of working. Right. I think I love Rembrandt, and people do spend entire art careers learning how to paint as well craft-wise as Rembrandt, you know, whether it's a portrait or, you know, landscape or still life or whatever. But while I appreciate that and I feel like I've learned a lot from that, I just do not want to spend my whole life, art life, you know, learning how to handle paint like that. The reality is I kind of want to spend my time tearing stuff up and learning about resin and learning about lasers. And it's like, there's only so many hours of the day. And ultimately whatever is like kind of what's feeding your soul is what you ought to follow. You can't be everybody, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like collage just gets, like there's this assumption that is made going into it it's a wrong assumption because people are comparing it to this like kind of idealized notion or this incorrect perception of what art is and what it has to be.
Right.
It's like, you don't have to go in and learn how to oil paint. You could, I mean, that's one of the options, but that you're not going to be an artist just because you know how to oil paint.
Exactly.
And the converse is also true. It's not like you're not an artist because you don't oil paint. Right?
Right. Right.
And if you make big, messy paintings, is it a Vermeer? No. Is it going to make people feel like a Vermeer makes them feel? No. But the other way is true also, is that if somebody's looking for something really big and splashy and physical and visceral, they're not going to go to Vermeer.
Exactly. Exactly.
They don't have to be the same. And thank goodness, you know, they're not.
What are your favorite materials to collage with?
I like the juxtaposition. I'm going to use that word. Photographic information, and it almost doesn't even matter what it's a photograph of, just that, like, the look of a photograph.
Yeah.
Next to, material, texture, abstract marks. So I think I like just taking pictures of my environment, you know, the back alley, the texture of the pavement, and just having that as bits of paper and using that as material. And then also just like different, like solid color papers. I don't know, I guess. Yeah. It's like, and then acrylic paint. What about you?
I love photography, and I love printing out my photographs onto a heavy matte paper, kind of like a printmaking paper, and then collaging into them that way. That's one of the things in Liberate, in the course, to talk through about how creating pages and spreads, they're more photography based, and collaging into those effectively. So, I guess I love the dimension of fabric and ribbon and anything that gives it a little lift and three-dimensional quality to it. I love natural, like putting in, if you're going to photograph, the piece isn't going to be just dried and framed or something, but it's going to be something that's maybe then collage and then photographed. I would love having some natural, like leaves or flowers in the piece. I love working with old paper, book paper, pages from old books, maps. I love tissue paper and pattern paper, you know, the folds up really thin, kind of goldish brown paper. I just love doing it.
Me too. I mean, like, I hear you say all those things and I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a great time. And
yeah,
the more variety, the better, right? It's like you get this, and that's a wonderful thing about collage to begin with, is it's like you have all this stuff. You get to figure out how to navigate and combine all these things into something that's, you know, cohesive and meaningful. You know, I don't know, that's like at the heart of the playfulness of creating, right? So you get to just all this stuff and you get to mush it together. The original question kind of pointed to somebody feeling like they weren't a real artist if they were doing collage. And I think I want to reinforce the notion that you got to stop thinking like that. I think that's an incorrect way of thinking, and it's keeping you from creating. If that's, if that's an assumption, if that's a foundational principle that you have, you got to stop thinking like that. A collage is not an oil painting. It is not a Vermeer or a Rembrandt or fill in the blank. It's a totally different thing. And you've got to decide what it is that you're trying to say and what the right, you know, techniques and materials are to say that.
Right.
And collage for a lot of us is a fantastic way to go about it. And you can say things with collage that you can't say with any other medium. And you can have an immediacy and a materiality with collage that isn't possible with any other, you know, paint only process. So I think it's just a tragedy. Well, that's overstating it, but I think it's sad that people, you know, feel like they don't have access to certain materials that they would really love to play with because it's not real art. You know, whatever with that.
I also think that scale, it's just great because you can do it at any scale. And And if you don't have scissors, it's always great because you can just use your hands.
Absolutely.
What materials do you use? What's your favorite as far as the adhesives go for collaging?
I think the nectar of the gods, I'd say I've said it often in my classes, is matte medium. I'd say like you don't want to use gloss medium just until the very end, because then you get little patches of matte and patches of gloss that can be kind of distracting. So I usually just say, I just use a ton. I get it by the gallon of matte medium. And that's what I use. What about you?
I use a glue mixture of like Elmer's glue with a bit of warm water, 2/3 glue, 1/3 water, and a sponge brush is good, or even a little less water depending. I think that dries really flat, and you can always still go over with ink. I run into challenges anytime having any adhesive that has acrylic in it. If I want to go over handwriting with ink over it, sometimes that can repel.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. No, that plasticky surface is not very friendly to aqueous media, to ink or watercolor or anything like that.
Yeah.
That's interesting, huh? Very cool.
Yeah. Okay, folks.
Well,
that's our show for today. Take us
away. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
What's up for the week? What you working on?
Liberate is going to open it for registration again in March. And so it's been exciting to just be diving into creating the new content and just getting really excited about it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's wonderful. What about you?
I am working on a couple big laser paintings, or, you know, resin and laser paintings.
Awesome.
Yep. That's what I'm doing.
All right. Sayonara.
Bye.
Is that what you say?
Sayonara. Yeah, I think so.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram at Sabrina Ward Harrison and at Trent Reynolds Art.
And check out the show notes at roomintheTrees.com, where you can also get in touch if you have any ideas you'd like to share.
If you like this podcast, please consider showing your support. You can become a subscribing patron at patreon.com/room.
Please help us grow our audience by rating us or writing a review on iTunes. To do that, you can use the link roomintheTrees.com/iTunes.